For Sounds of Dissent, I'm John Grebe. We'll speak with Pervez Houdboy, who is a nuclear physicist, an essayist, and political defense analyst. Pervez Houdboy was born and lives in Pakistan, came here to MIT, heads the physics department at the Qaid-e-Azam University in Pakistan, and researches in particle physics. Pervez Houdboy is an environmental and social activist and writes about cultural and environmental issues. He's chairman of a group called Mashal, who publish Urdu books in the Urdu language, predominant in Pakistan, books on feminism, education, environmental issues, philosophy, and modern thought. Pervez Houdboy, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to the program from Pakistan.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We have this discussion as for the last several days in around the world, there have been protests in the streets about this film. There have been some deaths that have resulted, protests at the American Embassy and other, not in Pakistan, of course, but in Benghazi, Libya, and also in Cairo, Egypt, and it spread to other countries around the world. We'll talk about some other protests on labor-related issues that you've attended a little bit later in the interview, but I just wanted to start out by asking you, is it common for protests to erupt in predominantly Muslim countries like Pakistan, like Libya and many other countries, when the name of the Prophet Muhammad is blasphemed?
Well, look, it doesn't take very much. You can have almost anything that will lead to just a wild surge. Now, just a few days ago, a few weeks ago, there was an illiterate Christian girl. She was maybe 13 years old, and she had Down syndrome, and she was caught with some ashes and some burnt papers, which had some holy verses on it, or at least so they say. And she was charged with blasphemy, sentenced to death, and the government was, didn't know what to do because it was getting such a bad name. There were thousands of people out protesting her release, and there have been mobs who have just ganged up on people and just burnt them to death. It doesn't take very much to raise sentiment against those who are alleged to have blasphemed. This is extremely dangerous. It's been used against the minorities in Pakistan, and it's very scary.
To set up some of the understanding for the cultural background about blasphemy as it is understood in especially in many predominantly Muslim nations. Because here in the United States, blasphemy is something that, yes, witches were probably burned for right here in Salem, Massachusetts, in this area 300 years ago. And yes, blasphemy was something that people were put in jail for in the United States, but over 100 years ago. And of course, people would not justify persecution or invasions from foreign countries because the United States was persecuting people for blasphemy. But sometimes that is used as a pretext for United States intervention in other countries. This, I don't mean blasphemy specifically only, but this kind of judgment about other cultures' norms and standards. And I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how, as a child, you might have been taught about blasphemy.
The issue of blasphemy wasn't very much around when I was growing up in Karachi. It's come into prominence particularly since the 1980s, and that's the time when General Zia-ul-Haq, who hanged the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto, seized the reins of power. He set about Islamicizing Pakistan and making it move away from being a Muslim state into an Islamic state. Muslim state meaning one where the majority is Muslim, Islamic meaning one which is ruled by the Sharia. And so the whole concept of blasphemy changed. Blasphemy in the days of the British meant that there was some troublemaker who was trying to pit Muslims against Hindus or vice versa, and he'd say something against the Prophet of Islam, and that would cause civil disturbances. So the penalty for that was something like 6 months in jail. Well, then comes along General Zia-ul-Haq, and he says this is something that's a capital crime. And so the minimum penalty for blasphemy meaning anything that is that can be construed as derogatory against the Prophet of Islam, that penalty, the minimum penalty would be death. Now you might ask, what's the maximum? Well, I don't know. But anyway, that's it. Now you come to the issue of the United States. All right. Well, look, I think that the issue of blasphemy is primarily an issue of Muslim societies. They have become defensive, they become aggressive to the rest of the world and to their own citizens. You could blame the United States, if you want to, for having nurtured this in the past.
It How so?
The case that General Zia ul-Haq How so? Well, General Zia ul-Haq was the man who was recruited by the Americans, by the CIA, for fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. And that's the blowback that brought about 9/11 eventually, because the Mujahideen morphed into various Islamist groups, including Al-Qaeda and so forth. But now that is the past. I think that the United States has got a bloody nose on account of having aided Muslim fundamentalists in the past. Well, it still continues to do that in Saudi Arabia, but I think that is an aberration now in the entire U.S. policy. It's learned some lessons. However, look, I'm not seeing things as you are, because I'm living here in Pakistan, and I see how the Hindus, how the Ahmadis, how the Shias are being persecuted by the majority, and they're terrified. The allegation of blasphemy is enough for you to be lynched in the streets today. It's terrible. And frankly, the U.S. can do what it like, but this is what terrifies me as well.
You mentioned some interesting background I hadn't understood before, which is that blasphemy was also a crime that sort of grew out of this time. It sounds, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that at the time of British partition between India and Pakistan, which were once all one region, or perhaps you could say one nation, and the British sort of mandated and enforced this division, creating the two separate countries, and there's been a lot of dislocation and resettlement and people forced to move away from their ancestral homes, families split up, and a nationalistically enforced division between a Hindu nation and a Muslim nation at that time. Was that a time when blasphemy was actually exploited as a way to stir up mass discontent at the time?
Yes, it was, because look, when religious passions rise, then some guy getting up and saying that the Prophet of Islam is this or that, it can have an enormously disturbing effect upon people. And so, in fact, there is the case of a Hindu author who wrote a book called Rangila Rasul, meaning the colorful prophet. And he was murdered. That murderer was a Muslim who is now a hero. He was a hero even for our great national poet, Muhammad Iqbal, and for the founder of this nation, Mr. Jinnah. They actually celebrated what he had done. Blasphemy is a part of using religion as a means of mobilizing people, as a means of mobilizing sentiment against somebody else. It's taken particularly seriously in Islam and among Muslims, because even the slightest hint of dishonor against the Prophet is enough for you to just have it. And let me give you the example of another Christian woman, an illiterate woman, who had a fight with her Muslim neighbors. And whether she said something or not against the Prophet will never be known, because those words cannot be repeated in court. Asia Bibi, this woman that I'm referring to, is in a jail. She is awaiting execution. The governor of Punjab, his name was Salman Taseer, said, hey, this is not right. If there were no witnesses, how can we hang her? And so he was seen by his bodyguards as somebody who was also a blasphemer, and so he was shot. 22 bullets went through him. And the man, the murderer, is a hero in Pakistan. He was showered with rose petals by lawyers. And so look, John, the point is that you have the global scene with the United States there and so forth, but there's a much more desperate battle which is being fought in Pakistan, and we're losing it.
There's a bit of a miasma of conflict around both religion, religionist nationalism, and also straight political nationalism in the region. Pakistan is the country you were just describing where that incident took place. Also, just in the past week, this Indian cartoonist was charged with sedition, to go to the nationalism side of this, over a cartoon that was critical of the Indian government. He's an Indian cartoonist in India, writing this cartoon in Indian newspapers. This is Asim Trivedi, and apparently he's been released on bail, but he's facing these charges of sedition and fighting to get this law 124A repealed in India. So of course, in the United States, there are sedition charges that can occur and did occur, and essentially witch hunts, even in the 1900s. The McCarthy era comes to mind, the blacklisting of actors for expressing viewpoints or favoring one economic system over another, communism over capitalism, without even doing anything else illegal at all. So I wonder how you see the interconnection between political nationalism and aspirations to it by some parties and the desire to whip up fury about something like blasphemy. Are they connected? Are they used? Is there a history of using that passion and those religious and political intertwining parts of history to achieve political ends? Do you see that at work in Pakistan?
Well, look, I wasn't around in the McCarthy era, and I don't know if you were either, but that's the time when they hung the Rosenbergs, and it was a trumped up case over there. So in that era, the U.S. administration was using anti-communism as a means of asserting political control, and it did work in suppressing the Communist Party of the United States and so forth. But look, even at its worst, that McCarthy era was gentle compared to what it is around over here. And I have full sympathies for that Indian cartoonist. He certainly should not be in jail. It's a despicable use of the excuse of national sovereignty, the use of nationalism and so forth. But at least he has a fighting chance in the courts. Here, what happens is that if somebody is accused of blasphemy, even if he's exonerated by the courts, and the courts so far have been very reluctant to do that, but the minute he steps into court, his life is in danger because he could be shot either while going in, being there, or coming out. And that's what happened to dozens of cases over the last few years. So it's pretty desperate. And look, nationalism and religion, to my mind, are both evil. They are both people. They're both things that can use human energies and emotions in destructive ways. But the extent to which they are used is different in different societies at different points in space and time.
There's an aspect of this which touches on free speech, because that's something that's enshrined in the Constitution in the United States. And in the United States, where many people respect the idea of having a freedom of speech, although there are actually exceptions to it that are not often discussed in championing the First Amendment, the Free Speech Amendment, as it's sometimes called in the U.S. Those would include some of the McCarthy era prosecutions and persecutions that we were mentioning earlier about communism, about people speaking about communism. Also, certain subjects are considered not to be touched. And you might not be charged with sedition, but you might be fired from your job, for example, if you talk about the Holocaust in a disrespectful way, or if you talk about the politics of Israel in a way that is sort of even just neutral and analytical and critical in nature, as opposed to voicing an American sort of State Department foreign policy view of exclusive support for whatever Israel does. Those are just a couple of examples, and there are others. But I say that just to point out that there are actually limits and bounds on freedom of speech, whether they're legalistic in the United States or job discriminatory. But I wonder how you see there in Pakistan the different kinds of freedom of expression or freedom of speech and the limitations on it and the way that it's politically sensitive and that people might be aspiring for more of it.
Look, I completely agree with what you said about you're not being able to tell the truth about Israel in the United States, and that if you do try, well, your political career, for one thing, is pretty much then finished with. Even Obama has had to bend over backwards to please Israel. That said and done, you raise a very difficult issue of whether there ought to be limits to free speech. And I say, with reluctance, yes. If you are at a gas station, should you be allowed to light a cigarette? Absolutely not. It is not your right to do that, because you're going to burn up a lot of people that way, cause a lot of destruction. So these people in the United States who are writing and producing these inflammatory films ought to be stopped, for not just the sake of the United States, for the sake of people around the world. To drive Muslims into a state of heat at this point is so easy. And if you want your ambassador shot, if you want people, innocent Christians in Pakistan killed, or innocent Ahmadis here killed, well, do something as stupid as this fellow did. I don't even know his name, who produced that film on
Nakula, also known as Basili. Yeah.
Yes. To my mind, he's a person who's lit a match at a gas station. It's not his right to do that.
I want to ask you something else, Pervez Boyd, just in the final couple of minutes we have left, about something else that's been going on in Pakistan, and something that has resulted in, I believe, many more deaths just recently than perhaps all of the protests in Muslim nations, or as you distinguish, Islamic nations, either one, over blasphemy. And that is some very tragic fires in factories in which the workers had no accessible or effective fire escapes. What happened there? Can you tell us a little bit about what happened and about some of the protests against it that resulted?
Oh, it was an industrial tragedy, not quite on the scale of Bhopal, but over the last 1 week or so, in two different fires, in two separate cities, 300 industrial workers, garment makers, they made shirts and jeans and so forth, died in a fire, and the exit doors were locked by the management so that they couldn't get out before their shift was over, or so that they couldn't steal the finished products or whatever. And well, it's a national tragedy, but what I have to tell you is that it's not being recognized anywhere as significant as that blasphemy issue which we were talking about earlier. So yesterday I was at a protest demonstration in Islamabad that was called by a left group. There were fewer than one person for every worker that had been killed in those fires. So I'm talking of less than 300 people. And what's even more disturbing to me is that some of the speakers over there were saying, look, there could have been a conspiracy against Pakistan over here. Let's ask the intelligence agencies to investigate. Maybe this is an act of terrorism inspired by the United States or Israel or whatever. So, you know, we thinking people, have to keep our minds straight. The fact is that it was the factory owners who were responsible, the government agencies who are supposed to look after worker safety that failed. It's not a foreign agency which did it. And to my mind, we Pakistanis are being deluded into believing that we're being manipulated all the time from outside. That way of thinking, to my mind, is so important to change.
Pervez Hoodbhoy is our guest, if you're just joining us. And Pervez Hoodbhoy, I'm curious to ask you a bit, too, about the legal reaction within Pakistan. Pakistan is known for having so many lawyers in the profession. And has there been a reaction against the factory owners that has something related to any kind of labor rights campaigns in Pakistan?
Unfortunately, those guys are going to get away with it. They are rich. They will be able to bribe their way through. And their passports have been seized for the time being, but it's only a very small penalty. They'll get them back. On the other side, you have 300 families which are in, you can just imagine their situation, wretched. Unfortunately, justice doesn't work in this society. It works to an extent in the United States. In fact, far better over there. Not as well as it should, but nowhere is it as bad as it is over here.
Pervez, finally, I'm curious to ask you, in watching in your lifetime the various ways in which incidents about blasphemy have occurred or have been used politically or have, after they occur, been taken up as a political cause by politicians, how often does that occur? Do you have any in recent memory or memory from the last decades as examples of the ways in which passions stirred up by blasphemy ever get taken up by some political figure or by some political party as a way to sort of seize on the emotions of people who might elect them or support them?
Well, ever since the death penalty was instituted for blasphemy, no government has and no political leader in Pakistan has touched it, with one exception, and I'm not very happy to name that exception. It's General Pervez Musharraf, who I do not like. He did say, in fact, he declared that that there would be particular conditions under which a case of blasphemy could be registered against an individual. So if somebody, if there's an accuser, he will have to go to a police station, fill out a report, and that the district magistrate, and it cannot be taken up by the police directly. Now, it was a very small change, and it was designed so as to avoid some of the most egregious excesses of the blasphemy law. Yet, there was such a strong reaction from the religious lobby in Pakistan that General Musharraf, who at that time was at the peak of his powers, had to retreat. And so, no political leader, including Nazir Bhutto, it includes Nawaz Sharif, and it includes the present government, none of them have tried to change the blasphemy law. And as far as I can see, it'll not happen in my lifetime.
Well, Pervez Hoodbhoy, thank you so much for joining us from Pakistan. And I'll just mention Pervez Hoodbhoy is the chairman of a nonprofit called Mashal, who publish books in the predominant language in Pakistan, Urdu, books about feminism, education, environmental issues, philosophy, and modern thought. Pervez Hoodbhoy is a nuclear physicist and an essayist. He was born and lives in Pakistan, came to the United States for education at MIT, and heads the physics department at Qaid e Azam University. Pervez Hoodbhoy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.